This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we go around the state with the Texas Scorecard Bureaus. Former President Obama is getting involved in some North Texas elections. At the Capitol, the Senate is working on reducing and eliminating the license to work. And in the Houston area, one small town is coming together to address financial problems the right way. In our interview this week, we talked to Human Coalition about their work to combat human trafficking in the Texas abortion industry. And we'll close with a commentary from Carrie Cheshire. Coming to you from the 1836 studios, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. Follow me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. You can also find out more about the show, www.texasscorecard.com. Also, empowertexans.com. Lots of good information up there, including our daily reporting that we put out. You can find out how to subscribe to that. For this week's news, I've got Capitol Bureau Chief Brandon Walton's in the studio. Big news, former President Obama getting involved in some legislative races, particularly up in North Texas.
Yes. Former President Barack Obama sort of coming out of the woodwork and wedging himself into the Texas political discussion as he released some endorsements for some congressional and some state legislative races, particularly a few up in Dallas County.
Yeah, really interesting, you know, that he's reaching down into stuff that's kind of sometimes below the national radar, but actually picking some Democrats, supporting them, against some very conservative candidates, and they're kind of thinking, hey, maybe this is actually a help.
Yes, exactly. So he endorsed candidate Rheta Bowers, a Democrat up in East Dallas County. He's running against Jonathan Booz, who's a conservative running as a Republican for that seat. Also endorsing Julie Johnson. Now, Julie Johnson is the far-left liberal candidate who's running against State Representative Matt Rinaldi, who's been a taxpayer champion since he's been in the House since 2015.
Yeah, and so really interesting in these races, particularly in North Texas, where you have some serious political battlegrounds, these Democrats are wanting to portray themselves as kind of middle-of-the-road people, you know, something that might be acceptable in what are traditionally really Republican districts, you know, maybe marginally Republican, but Republican districts. This kind of hurts that effort, I think.
Well, and especially if you look, I mean, it's not too long ago, President Obama was soundly rejected, right, in 2008 and 2012 by a big majority of Texas voters. You look at the endorsements he's made this cycle. I mean, he endorsed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the socialist candidate up in New York. And so, you know, even Representative Rinaldi took to Twitter, made a joke that, you know, Obama must just be mad that he didn't vote for him.
that's pretty funny. Well, but I mean, I think it's serious that these endorsements, mm-hmm. you see a national thing and you have a whole track record over 8 years that really Texans seem to have rejected.
Right.
Maybe getting kind of stuck on these candidates here in the Dallas area.
Exactly. We know that Dallas County is going to be an important area for conservatives to come out and vote. But for Democrats who are trying to make a play there, having the support and the endorsement of somebody who Texans have rejected on the ballot twice is a very liberal person. Maybe not the tact that they want to take if they want to win.
Next, let's turn to Sal Ayala with Empower Texans. Sal, you're covering some work going on over in the legislature where they're looking at the success and progress we're making on freeing Texans from having to get a license to work.
Yeah, Tony. So recently, the Senate Business and Commerce Committee, which is chaired by Kelly Hancock, held a hearing to talk about one of the interim charges that they were given, and that was to monitor implementation of legislation to deregulate occupational licensing, but also to review existing requirements and fees and to make recommendations for reductions, repeal, or to transition to private sector enforcement.
Yeah, and so this is a big deal for a lot of Texans. Lots of people are required to go to the state to get a license in order to do their job. It's some of these jobs are, I mean, to me, it's almost silly. It's farcical that we regulate these things. I know that the head of TLDR that was there talking about it. Tell us a little bit about some of these jobs that we've deregulated recently.
Yeah, so the first person to give testimony before the committee was Brian Francis, who's the executive director of the Department of Licensing and Regulation. And he spoke a little bit about some of the deregulation efforts that the department has worked on lately, especially since 2016. But he did mention that the department had completed deregulation for certain specialties like shampoo specialists, temporary common workers, vehicle booters, vehicle protection product warranters, towing trainees, and of course...
Towing trainees, not just tow truck operators.
Yeah. And the obvious one from recent headlines, the eyebrow threaders.
Yeah, so they've deregulated these industries. There's a lot of talk there and a lot of interest in expanding this to kind of even more professions, not just necessarily deregulating, but kind of reducing the regulation that we have.
Right, and that was a point that came out during the hearing itself. Chairman Hancock was asking Executive Director Francis about new licenses that have been created during the same period that Francis claimed 22 were eliminated, and he remarked that there were three new licenses created for transportation network companies, behavioral analysts, and also one for responsible pet owners, which is apparently one that people can get if they've been accused or charged of abusing an animal and they want to get another one.
So get an official stamp of approval for pet ownership. Yeah. I know that some of the groups were there testifying saying, hey, this isn't enough. We've got a lot more work in front of us.
That's right, yeah. And so a lot of the really good testimony came from the first panel. The first person was Matt Mitchell, who's an economist at the Mercatus Institute, who talked a lot about the state of occupational regulation in the state of Texas, but also the arbitrary nature of some of these licensing rules. Like, one of the examples he gave was compared to EMTs, emergency medical technicians, for example, barbers undergo 10 times more training, security alarm installers need 20 times more training, and athletic instructors need 40 times more training.
Yeah.
He also pointed out issues in occupational regulation, like cartel dominance of licensing boards by industry players, and he mentioned one case where a released convict who was trained in a profession while he was in prison was barred from obtaining his license upon release.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's good that these groups are coming in there and advocating, because there's so much more work to be done. Essentially, these licenses is a license to work, and it's there to prevent competition. That's the effective lesson we learn in this. And so good to see the Senate doing work on it. Good to see a little bit of coverage about the good work that they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay tuned. I'm sure there'll be more in the next session.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right, Tony.
Now let's turn and go down to Charles Blaine with Texas Scorecard's Houston Bureau. Charles, you've been covering some local citizens in Crosby who are dealing with financial struggles in their local community the right way.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Tony. It's not something that you typically see. I mean, you always hear about different issues in local entities and state entities, but you never really see them fight back and kind of handle it themselves. So what we've got going on here is really interesting.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we see government by crisis. You know, there's some kind of problem that happens, and then, of course, what's the answer? Well, grow government, increase taxes, you know, whatever, some kind of bad policy choice. And it sounds like folks there in Crosby are working together. So tell us a little bit about the problem that they're facing and what, I guess we'll segue a little bit and talk about how they're trying to solve that problem.
Yeah, so what they're facing right now is, you know, their new superintendent who has been there for about a year has come out and said that there is a ton of financial, you know, malfeasance within the district. They previously had a superintendent who was covering all these borrowing from one fund to put to another, doing short-term loans, all these various financial exchanges to try to cover up all the debt and the misspending that the district was doing. He got called out on it by State Rep. Briscoe Kane.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. So one of the conservative reps there was saying, hey, I'm hearing from citizens that there's a problem in this district. And the guy kind of fought back. He's going, oh, no, this is all lies, everything. Well, I guess it turns out it's true.
Right. It, you know, took a little time, but a year later, here we are now finding out that everything that Rep. Kane was saying turned out to be true. So really, kind of to summarize, he borrowed, you know, over $8 million from the construction fund to pay for payroll, and now they can't pay for payroll because they have no more reserve funds. So they're in a really bad situation. So
But they're really stepping up to solve this problem. It's kind of neat to see the community stepping in.
Yeah, so one of the first things the district did was say that they were going to have to lay folks off. So one of the first areas that was impacted was the football stadium. They couldn't clean it after the game. So once the district parents and students found out about it, they teamed up and showed up after one of the games one day and literally cleaned the entire stadium in 3 minutes. They had over 100 volunteers come out and do the job themselves.
Yeah, and so instead of having, I think of it the way the federal government operates during a shutdown. With the government shut down, we immediately closed the Washington Monument. We immediately closed the federal parks. You know, if this were government by crisis there, they could have come in and said, well, we're just going to let the trash pile up. But, you know, you're seeing the community step in and say, no, we'll take care of it. We can help with that.
Right, right. And their generosity didn't end there. I mean, they did so much else. They, did a GoFundMe page to raise money for the band trip. They did, parents are raising money to put, drinks and beverages in the teachers' refrigerators so the district doesn't have to pay for that. And they had even 40 guys who were willing to bring their lawnmowers and cut every property for the district so that they didn't have to pay for that. Unfortunately, it became a little bit of liability issues. They haven't done it yet, but they're sitting on standby waiting for the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think this is really a great example of a community reacting to bad governance in the right way of self-governance, stepping up and saying, hey, we'll put it on our backs. It's going to come out of our pocket eventually regardless, so we might as well step up and volunteer. And it's good to see folks doing that.
Right. That was the most exciting part about this story, why I really wanted to write about it, was because you don't often hear of this. This is how it should be, but you don't hear of it that regularly. So I'm hoping it can, spur some other people around the state to do the same, to kind of see a problem and handle it themselves instead of waiting for their government to do it.
Yeah. Now, I think it's a great example, and I appreciate you reporting on it. Thanks, Charles.
Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on Texas Scorecard Radio this week Lori Zalla with Human Coalition, a pro-life organization based here out of Texas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, we've had you on before and talked to the organization about the work you all do, putting data to work in terms of saving lives, not pure political activism. Like, a lot of people think pro-life, preventing abortions, that's a political thing. And I think it's more of a service thing, a cultural thing, a serving women to help them kind of thing for your organization. But I wanted to talk about a particular area that you all are becoming experts on and working in, and that's combating human trafficking here in the state of Texas. Tell us, how do these issues interact? How is human trafficking related to abortion?
Well, actually, there are many studies out there that have interviewed women and girls that have been victims of sex trafficking or human trafficking. And those studies are showing that there are similarities between abortion and sex trafficking. Many are reporting that they've had one or up to five or more pregnancies while they were victims of trafficking.
And so is this a way, is abortion a way to conceal these sorts of crimes?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are we seeing in Texas from sex trafficking? What actually goes on? Because people understand that this conceptually happens in different ways, but what is actually happening in Texas? Are there any statistics about the number of women who are trafficked through? And what's happening here in this state where we have this kind of modern form of slavery?
Well, it's a $99 billion industry, and 4.5 million humans worldwide are sex slaves. So 20% of those trafficked victims are children, and it's happening in states all across America. You would really not even know it. Sex trafficking affects minorities, especially African-American females, and 52% of them are juveniles. So it's very large in our state as well as around the country. It's a problem.
And so is this, I mean, are there prostitution rings? Is this connected to strip clubs? Is this, how is this happening that it's so common?
Well, there are prostitution rings. They are definitely strip clubs. You find human trafficking in nail salons, massage parlors. There are numerous ways that you wouldn't recognize typically.
And so these predators, you know, these people, these cartels and other criminal organizations are taking people, I guess a lot of times through illegal immigration and through smuggling, they smuggle them into the country and then exploit them for profit. And then, you know, obviously being sex related, it's connected to reproduction. There's children that are produced as part of this. And so is that kind of how y'all have come in to intersect with the sex trafficking world?
Well, absolutely. We have been recognizing that there is a link between abortion and sex trafficking. And the abortion clinics are taking part in this whole process by ignoring the signs and not helping these women. Instead of helping them to be rescued from trafficking, they are actually taking their money and helping to hide these issues, these pregnancies. And so there are several victims here. There is the woman and their preborn child.
Sure.
That are being manipulated by both the trafficker and the abortion clinics, and they're making money off of it.
You know, I've heard certain stats about this, and I'm sure y'all are more the experts on this, but I've heard certain stats that it's a huge percentage of abortions come at some kind of coercion, either from some male, you know, that a man takes the woman, a pregnant woman, to an abortion clinic in order to avoid the responsibilities he has to the child. And these women kind of a lot of times feel very coerced. How prevalent is that in terms of abortions that go on, you know, to the extent that they're arguably not elective, they're compelled by some outside person? And is there anything that we can do about it as a state and as a community?
Well, there's a lot that we can do about it. It is very prevalent, actually. 55% have reported to have been forced or coerced into an abortion, sometimes higher. It just depends on the situation. That's what we're seeing. We absolutely can educate ourselves. The first thing that we should do is to educate ourselves, to recognize the signs, to form relationships with people, ask questions so that they confide in you. And if they do confide in you, know how you're going to help them. We bring organizations into our clinics, our women's care clinics around the country, so that we can educate our staff on how to recognize the signs of a woman who's being trafficked, how to ask the right questions so that she will feel comfortable and confident in confiding in us. And then once she does, how we can help rescue her from that situation. We don't just want her to walk back out the door and into the traffickers control again. We want to be able to help her out the back door with law enforcement to get her somewhere safe so that she can then begin a process of healing. We've just recently been a part of rescuing a woman who contacted us from outside the state of Texas. She needed to escape a very abusive trafficker. We got her into a shelter, and she was there for a few days. We connected her with another organization that helps rescue women outside of the state that she was in. She is now connected, living in that rescue home, and said to us that she had hope for the first time since she was a teenager.
Wow.
And that girl, and that young woman actually, and her preborn child are now safe from somebody who's been abusing her and trafficking her since she was a teenager.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is the first time she's been able to breathe and see hope for her situation.
So, you know, the amazing thing that I'm hearing here is the left and the abortion industry want to portray abortion rights as some type of women's empowerment. But when I'm hearing from you that, you know, upwards of 55%, more than half of abortions are coerced by some, you know, some man who's trying to either conceal a crime or avoid responsibility for his actions, this doesn't look like any kind of women's empowerment. It's aiding and abetting criminality.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And it's degrading. It's degrading. You are not lifting up that woman and pouring into that woman, and we're not helping her in any way, shape, or form. We are tearing her down and participating in that if we are not. That's what they're doing. Nearly 30% of victims surveyed report contact with a Planned Parenthood clinic, and those are victims of sex trafficking.
Wow.
That's a large number.
And so the Planned Parenthoods out there that portray themselves as serving women are not actually doing the things to intervene in these situations and pull women out of these horrifying conditions. Let's talk a little bit about what you all do with Human Coalition. So you're involved with having these women's care clinics. And I guess y'all are actually training the staff at these clinics to say, hey, let's identify the signs that these things are going on and do something about it.
Absolutely. So we're helping women at their most vulnerable state when they are scared and confused and can't see hope for their situation. We're used to that. We're trained to help women, to support them, and help them to see their challenges as just a small thing that they can overcome. These are crisis challenges. They can't see hope for their situation. Sometimes the pregnancy is a challenge to them.
Sure.
And they can't see themselves doing that. If we come in and support her and help her to remove those challenges with the support services that we have at our fingertips, then she can see hope for her situation. And the desire of her heart is to become that mother to that preborn child. So we want to help her to reach the desire of her heart. When we see victims of domestic violence or trafficking, we want to definitely interact and help rescue her immediately, get her out of that situation first. That's the most important thing, is to get her out of that situation first, and then we'll help her with the pregnancy and her situation.
So what are some of the resources that are available out there? I mean, there may be listeners out there who are listening to this program and going, you know, okay, I'm pregnant. I really don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think I can afford this. I don't know that I have a family support structure. Maybe the father is nowhere to be seen. Who knows? These things that go on. And obviously, there's much even more horrifying, tragic situation than that. But for a woman who's out there and saying, oh, my gosh, I'm facing this, what are the resources that are available?
Well, the state of Texas has an amazing abundance of resources that they really don't even know anything about. So there are health insurance resources for their children. There are educational resources, job training resources, anything you need. It's here in the state of Texas. And if the state of Texas doesn't provide it, then there's social service organizations, Christian organizations all over the state, in the churches, in the communities around them. They just have to know where to find them. And that's our job. Our job is to connect her to those resources and to help be a support system for her when she doesn't know where to find them.
Yeah, you know, they aren't going to necessarily know what's out there. And so I guess in a way these clinics can say, well, I'm kind of like a bit of a coach. Here's where you go. Here's who I can connect you with, you know, exactly. And not just helping yourselves, but also finding others who want to be involved and want to be helpful.
That's right.
So before we finish up, tell listeners a little bit, where can they get connected with Human Coalition? Where can they learn more about the resources that are out there and available to them?
Sure. Well, you can find Human Coalition online at humancoalition.org. You can also find us on Facebook. You can follow us there as well. We have a lot of information on our website that talks to you. It'll let you know actually what cities we're working with in around the country, and help you to get connected. If you just email us, we can help you get connected to the right resources in your community, and help you to get involved. to not sit on the sidelines, to jump in and get involved.
Great. Well, for listeners out there, if you're in need of resources, you know someone is, Human Coalition, great resource. If you want to be helpful and be involved in helping young women who are in tough situations or really just horrifying, tragic situations, like we're talking about, Human Coalition, great resource. Thank you for joining me, and God bless you all for the work you do.
Thank you. I appreciate you having us on.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as seeing what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away an awesome custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. Everyone should sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S, .com.
Up next in this week's commentary, Carrie Cheshire gives us part three of a four-part series on the criteria that citizens should be looking at as they choose the next Speaker of the Texas House.
When looking at Speaker candidates, perhaps no better window exists than how they acted during the special session called by Governor Greg Abbott in 2017. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire. Earlier this month, we began laying out the criteria that citizens and their legislators should use to evaluate candidates seeking election as the next Texas House Speaker. Our second requirement is, a Speaker candidate must have a record of supporting conservative reforms, even when doing so in the past required opposition to leadership. Why is this important? Joe Strauss's obstruction of conservative reforms over the past decade is a symptom of the cronyism and corruption in Austin. And it would be foolish to think that someone who has never shown a track record of standing up to Joe Strauss would suddenly be willing to stand up to his puppet masters now that he's gone. As Scripture tells us in Luke 16:10, he who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much, and he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. The Speaker of the Texas House is a position that, for better or worse, bestows a great deal of power and authority upon the individual who wins the post. Voters can expect the next speaker to be tempted more than ever to side with Austin insiders over the promises they made to their supporters and to their fellow lawmakers. So how can citizens know which candidates they can entrust with that power? Perhaps no better window exists into which lawmakers stand on the side of citizens and the side of the crony Austin establishment is how they acted during the special session called by Governor Greg Abbott. Last summer, conservative activists statewide rallied behind legislation to strengthen the state spending limit, a long-sought goal of Republican activists. And the chairman of the Texas House GOP, State Representative Tan Parker of Flower Mound, carried the bill himself. This was mainstream conservative legislation that had previously passed the Texas Senate not once, not twice, but three times. Though the bill finally made it to the floor for a vote, Strauss and other members of his governing coalition conspired with Democrats to scuttle it on a point of order which Parker moved to overturn, forcing a vote. Of the announced candidates for Speaker, the majority voted with Democrats to kill the legislation. The exception, Tan Parker, who carried the bill, and Phil King. To see the full list, visit texasscorecard.com. Is this vote the only one by which a candidate should be measured? No, but it should serve as an effective starting point for evaluating who is and who isn't willing to stand up and fight for taxpayers. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire.
Carrie will be back next week with part four of his four-part series on the criteria Texans should be looking at as they're looking at the Texas House Speaker race. If you missed parts one or two or want to go back to that or just want to make sure that you're not missing any part or any show of Texas Scorecard Radio, you can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Google Play. If you're already subscribed to the podcast, go on there and give us a five-star review. That will help other Texans see the program, catch the program, and get informed. Well, we welcome you back next week, and until then, go do great things.
Texas Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.